Support for the Sound Ideas podcast comes from listener contributions to GLT, with additional support from Country Financial Representative Justin M. Boyd. Information at justinmboyd.com. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
Good afternoon. President Cullerton, Speaker Madigan, Leader Brady, Leader Durkin, Lieutenant Governor Sanguinetti, Attorney General Madigan, Secretary White, Comptroller Mendoza, Treasurer Frerichs, members of the General Assembly, distinguished guests and members of the media, welcome. To the members of our National Guard, our servicemen and women, and our veterans, thank you on behalf of a most grateful state. Bless you. To the citizens, the taxpayers of Illinois, it is an honor to serve you. My report on the state of the state this bicentennial year begins with a reflection on what has been born, built, and grown in Illinois. Our history is rich. We were the first state to ratify the constitutional amendment to abolish slavery. Presidents Lincoln, Grant, Reagan, and Obama called Illinois home. We taught the world how to rebuild a city when we scraped the sky after the Chicago fire. We invented the Twinkie and started the first nuclear chain reaction. With 36 Fortune 500 companies, 1.2 million small businesses, and 72,000 of the nation's greatest farms, we are the world's 17th largest economy. We are a top bioscience and medical center. 82 foreign consulates help connect us to the global economy. Our institutions of higher learning are world-renowned, world-connected. Most important, our people lead the world in hard work and innovation. You name the field, and we'll name the pioneers. There's poet Gwendolyn Brooks' record of our most personal struggles. Nobel laureate Robert Millikan's work with electrons in orbit. And James Lovell's moon orbiting Apollo 13. There's Benny Goodman's big band, and Walt Disney's big-eared mouse. Jane Addams' heroic social work. Butch O'Hare's Congressional Medal of Honor. There's Marshall Field on that great street, and John Deere's steel plow. Media moguls Robert McCormick and William S. Paley. Athletes Michael Jordan and Jackie Joyner Kersee. Authors Ernest Hemingway and Edna Ferber. Today, we produce 10% of our nation's computer scientists. We graduate more engineers than MIT, Stanford, and Caltech combined. Illinois grads have started YouTube, Oracle, CDW, PayPal, Tesla Motors, and so many more. This is where Illinois comes from. These are the people on whose shoulders we stand to envision our future. This is the lofty vantage point from which we now look ahead. Throughout our history, Illinois has been a magnet. If you wanted to till the soil, lay a brick, build a building, make a deal, supercompute, you name it, you could find work in Illinois, afford a home, and rely on the public schools to educate your children. Today, we have an opportunity to turn yesterday into tomorrow and make Illinois the powerhouse job creator we should be. We can do it. We united last fall to bid for Amazon's second headquarters. Governor, Mayor, General Assembly, city council, businesses and nonprofits, Republicans and Democrats, collaborated to compete for 15 years of growth with 168,000 potential jobs and $129 billion in cumulative new GDP. That's good. The fact is, there is another, even bigger, Amazon-like opportunity for us to pursue. This request for proposal comes from an enterprise called the State of Illinois. We have the assets, and we certainly have the incentives. 12.8 million fellow citizens who want us to ignite our economy. But this is not a prize one wins alone. It takes a collaborative effort, a forget about the politics and roll up our sleeves kind of approach. It requires a laser-like focus on economic development and job creation, and a bipartisan dedication to restore public trust. This legislative session is a chance for us to put in place the policies, the changes, the fiscal discipline to recruit many more Amazons. United, we can create thousands and thousands of jobs, attract billions of dollars in investment, and set millions of Illinoisans free to make more, buy more, and build more. So today, this report on the state of our state will focus on the places where we agree and where we can start to build to the future. The state of our state today is one of readiness. Readiness born of unprecedented frustration with our political culture, but with the firm belief that we have tremendous, but as yet unrealized, economic potential. The place to start is with a joint effort to restore public trust. To tell truth to power, to stand up against the establishment without fear of recrimination. These notions of democracy and social progress too often seem lost in Illinois government. Where once we joined to address our problems, we now divide to conquer the other side. Or worse, we legislate for expediency rather than effect. When the Me Too movement struck Springfield last fall, the outcry for ethical reform turned into legislation in a Hollywood minute. Unfortunately, many believe that transparency and accountability were sacrificed for optics and speed. So today, I will sign an executive order to strengthen the policies that ensure all government employees under my office's jurisdiction have reliable and responsive outlets for reporting acts of sexual misconduct. The order makes the Ethics Act supreme over all other laws and agreements in the state, even those in collective bargaining agreements. The order creates a chief compliance office in the executive branch, stipulates reviews of allegations in 10 days or less, and requires training on best investigation practices by the end of this year, and every 2 years after that. These are powerful protections that the legislature should emulate. Further, we will introduce legislation this session to make the Ethics Act the prevailing law of the state in all matters involving misconduct. Every man and woman here today, and every man and woman in our state, we are all unified in the expectation that we will act on our complete intolerance of and utter revulsion for sexual harassment. It is protection all must have and we must give. We will also ask you to come together for another important cause. 2.5 years ago, our departments of public health and Veterans Affairs responded to a tragic outbreak of Legionnaires' disease at our Quincy Veterans Home. Claimed the lives of 13 veterans. Our leadership team and our medical and caregiver staffs took all the right steps to deal with the crisis. We discovered the true cause of the outbreak through our proactive tests. We partnered with the CDC, took each of their recommendations, installed a $6 million new water treatment system, and instituted best practices for water flushing and purification. According to the CDC, the effort has resulted in a substantial reduction in cases of Legionnaires' disease and detectable Legionella in the water systems. Even though research shows that Legionella, unfortunately, is everywhere, including this very capital, our goal is to prevent Legionella infections at the Quincy home. The CDC says it is impossible to completely eliminate the bacteria, but we will fight against it as hard as our veterans fought for us. The latest CDC recommendations are being implemented. But we're going beyond the recommendations of experts, and we are investigating the possibility of entire system replacements, and perhaps even an entirely new facility. Some of my friends from the Quincy home are here with us today. Residents Ivan Jackson and Carol Jardine, and family members Marty and Vicki Fleer. Please stand. Thank you for your service. Please stand. Thank you for your service. God bless you. I know all of us share a passion to do everything we can to keep our veterans safe and healthy. I know I can count on all of you to support the improvements that are needed. The men and women who reside there put it all on the line for us. We must now do the same for them. No one in Illinois is happy with our property tax assessment system. Ordinary people, the ones without clout or connections or money to pay high-powered lawyers, none of them, they're all victims of a system rigged against them. For too long, big businesses and the well-to-do have gotten huge tax breaks, while little guys and little businesses take it in the pocketbook. Home values in some parts of our state are half what they were 10 years ago. Yet property taxes are twice as high. Small businesses often have to cut staff to pay their taxes. Elderly couples on fixed incomes are too often pushed out of their homes because they cannot afford their property taxes. Christine Wilson is here today. She is one of thousands of homeowners in Illinois that have property taxes that are unfair, unaffordable, and crushing their quality of life. Christine, thank you for your passionate advocacy to deal with property tax relief. It is a vicious form of oppression. The system traps people in their homes, vaporizes their equity, drives mortgages underwater, and in some cases, pushes people out of our state. It is time to put a stop to the corruption. 2 weeks ago, we issued an executive order that prevents legislators from practicing before the State Property Tax Appeal Board. And today, Senator Oberweis and Representative Worley, and thank you both, will introduce legislation that asks you to apply this same reform to every legislator who might practice before an assessment appeal board anywhere in the state. And once again, we will ask you to pass legislation that brings true property tax relief. given people the ability to lower their property taxes through a simple voter referendum. These are reforms we must enact if we want common sense to win out over corruption. There is one more step we need to take to regain public confidence. 80% of Illinois' voters want term limits. The other 20%, it seems, are seated in this chamber and in elected Illinois courts. It is past time to make this good governance move. Put term limits on the ballot and let the people decide. As quick and decisive as we need to be on ethics, we need to be just as aggressive on jobs and the economy. There is no question we need the economic spark. News of population declines and slow business growth have effects that go far beyond troublesome headlines. They cost us jobs and rob us of tax revenue. I don't know anyone in this chamber or in the entire state who isn't frustrated when we spend beyond our means, or borrow to cover deficits, or let pension issues go unresolved. Yet there is example after example of what can be done on a bipartisan basis to reverse the trend. Rhode Island reformed their pensions. California enacted term limits. Massachusetts changed their group health plans and lowered workers' comp insurance rates. We have the power to take similar steps. The question is whether we have the will to take them. But there is no question about this. We have planted the seeds of growth in our economy. We've put 120,000 people to work here in Illinois. We've brought and kept business here. Amazon, General Mills, Nucor Steel, Brandt Industries, and many more. We signed the Future Energy Jobs Act to preserve the state's energy options and create thousands of jobs in our energy industry. Because we are a recognized leader in the energy sector, job holders in Clinton and Quad Cities and all over the state reap the benefit. We helped launch the Illinois Innovation Network and the Discovery Partners Institute, a U of I-led effort to link the power of great research to entrepreneurship and new business formation. What Stanford and Berkeley and Harvard and MIT are to the coasts, partnerships of the U of I, U of C, and Northwestern can even surpass for Illinois. We've given our state tools to compete. We've cut red tape. We've slashed fees for small business by 70%. Signed EDGE tax credits into law to help staunch the outflow of businesses to our border states. We established Intersect Illinois to focus on business development. We traveled to Asia and Israel to bring more jobs to Illinois. And we declared a harvest emergency last fall to help farmers get crops to market. The key to job creation is education and training. And we have started to transform education in our state. During our time in the executive branch, funding for K-12 schools has increased $1.2 billion. And that includes record levels of funding for early childhood education. We enacted historic reforms together to end one of the most inequitable school funding formulas in the country. For most districts, it will be a welcome and long overdue infusion of new money for their programs. Now, need dictates resources, not zip codes. we achieved historic parity in per-pupil funding for charter schools. And we created Invest in Kids, the state's first ever tuition tax credit scholarship program. And now, with more than $45 million already contributed to the program, good students in low-income families will have a way to attend schools that meet their needs. Scholarship granting organizations have experienced unprecedented demand for the new program. One in Chicago received more than 11,000 student applications on the very first day. We created a task force to find ways to overcome the shortage of agriculture teachers, a critical need in a state with 27 million acres of prime farmland. These steps are designed to achieve one goal: prepare our children to be prosperous participants in the 21st century workforce. When we create the jobs, Illinois' young people will be ready to fill them. In a truly bipartisan effort, we have made historic, nationally acclaimed criminal justice reforms together. Fairness, responsiveness, and jobs are center points of our effort. People's lives should not be dictated by a mistake or by the failure of bureaucracy to deliberate and process. So, the backlog of 2,200 clemency requests left on my desk by my predecessors is now gone. Today, we deal with requests in real time. The state's prison population has been safely reduced by nearly 15%. We do everything we can to help nonviolent offenders and young offenders learn in prison so they don't go back to prison. Offenders can now train and test for professional licenses while they are serving in prison. I'd like you all to say hello to a guest here today, Landis Jackson. He's our first licensee. Landis, could you stand? Say hello. Landis. Next time you're in Cairo, and I hope you'll go visit, visit his barbershop as I did, and he'll show you the license he earned while he was in prison, and he'll tell you with pride about the business he's building. There is now a division in the Department of Corrections to help women, many of whom are moms, and 30% of whom end up back in prison within 3 years. We want to cut the recidivism rate so these mothers can be there to raise and love their children. Yes, thank you. On the enforcement side, to keep families safe, we've successfully joined with local and federal authorities to combat gang violence, as well as gun, drug, and human trafficking. Illinois State Police will have graduated 3 new trooper classes by the end of this summer. We're fighting the opioid epidemic. Our 24/7 helpline has steered hundreds of victims to the resources they need to begin recovery. Drug prescribers must now register in our prescription monitoring program so we can check potential abuses at critical points in the distribution cycle. We made it possible for first responders to use medication to block overdoses. We are determined to reduce projected opioid deaths by more than one-third in the years ahead. We work every day to help our agencies provide better service at lower costs to the taxpayers of Illinois. We now have 19 innovative new labor agreements in place to pay our hardworking state government employees based upon a 40-hour work week rather than 37 and a half hours, and pay on merit and productivity, not just seniority. We have launched technology initiatives to streamline our interface with taxpayers. The objective is to get online so we can facilitate customer service and business growth. We want government to work for people, not against them. Our Healthcare Fraud Elimination Task Force, in collaboration with Inspector General Maggie Hickey, has helped to root out Medicaid fraud to the tune of $450 million in taxpayer savings so far. We are also careful stewards of taxpayer dollars. What we spend isn't ours. It belongs to our taxpayers. And we think they deserve better value for their money. We have vetoed unbalanced budgets that would push us deeper into debt. We have vetoed tax increases that Illinoisans could not afford. And we vetoed the 32% income tax increase enacted last summer. In 2019, our pension costs will rise another $600 million. Ask anyone in this room if they think this trajectory of pension expense can be sustained. Most will say no. But most lack the courage to break with the status quo so we can change our path to the future. On this point, I think we can agree. It is time we do what the people of Illinois want. Halt the advance of taxes. Stop spending money we don't have. Get our pensions under control. And give power back to the people of Illinois. The surest road to economic vitality and job growth is a collaborative effort to regain our financial integrity. To that end, I will submit a balanced budget proposal next month. It will, again. And I hope this year you guys will pass it instead of ignoring it. It will offer a path to reduced spending. And it will show the way to surpluses going forward so we can cut taxes and start to push back against the assault on middle-class bank accounts. We have significant challenges ahead, but the opportunities we have are so extraordinary. So much like multiple Amazons. We must rally around the cause of job growth for all Illinoisans. The simple truth is, of our shared experience, we cannot tax and borrow our way into prosperity. We can and must grow our way into a more prosperous future. We all know that the people of Illinois are taxed out. So just as we reverse the flow of the Chicago River, it is time to change the flow of money in Illinois. Let's curb our spending and work together to give people the capital they need to build and grow. If that happens, we will produce more good-paying jobs, higher personal incomes and income growth, and attract talented taxpayers to our economy. Abraham Lincoln once said, "The best way to predict the future is to create it." It is within our power to produce an Illinois that lives up to our resources. The seeds are planted. The work has begun. Now is the time to finish the job. Thank you all. God bless our veterans. God bless the people of Illinois. And God bless the United States of America. Thank you.
Governor,
will the committee of escort please come forward to escort the governor?
Fourth annual State of the State speech to a joint session of the Illinois General Assembly here in the Illinois House Chambers in Springfield. Good afternoon. I'm Jack Titchener along with Rich Miller and Amanda Vinicky, continuing Illinois Public Television and Illinois Public Radio coverage of the governor's speech. The biggest round of applause from both sides of the aisle was when the governor said he was going to introduce a balanced budget next week, 2 weeks from now, Rich.
Uproarious applause. A little bit of it, a little snark in that applause, I think. A little...
I heard one Democratic legislator, I'm assuming that's who it was, that side of the room anyway, say, really? Quite loudly. And it wasn't just... once. I mean, it was kind of an instant applause, laughs, standing up, down again, standing up some more, and that was the only time that the governor actually went off script, and he retorted with, I hope you guys pass it instead of ignoring it this time, which got Republicans on their feet.
And that's been his excuse over the years when they say, well, why haven't you introduced a balanced budget, even though he says he always introduced balanced budget. He said, well, I introduced, my first one was balanced, and then they ignored it. So why even
bother?
Which
is valid. They did ignore it.
Except
but
it wasn't balanced either.
That too.
First it wasn't balanced, and second, yes, they did ignore it. They often ignore.
And part of the backstory is on this that some of the savings that he was projecting through pension reform and things like that were built into the base of that, and it wasn't going to happen.
He's not the first governor to submit an unbalanced budget by any means. Well, he's the first governor, though, who just repeatedly, like it's a mantra, saying, I have always introduced balanced budgets, when he didn't. I mean, a year ago, his new budget director, who's no longer around, stood in front of reporters and said, this budget is balanced. Even though there was like $3 billion, obviously, that wasn't balanced at all.
Yeah.
What was it, working together on a grand bargain?
There was a chunk that was committed to working together on this bipartisan deal, which we saw time and time again the governor reject, even though lower-ranking officials had.
And a long story short, you got people coming on, but it's going to be a long road to go to get a balanced budget
in
this state.
And we're going to ask one of those coming up next on Illinois Lawmakers, Senate President John Compton. Rich Miller, thanks very much for your time and your expertise. We appreciate it. You know, another thing that happened, Amanda, just a few minutes before the governor came in, the House overrode his amendatory veto of Senate Bill 444, which was on that school funding reform bill. The Senate did that just a few minutes before. That was kind of a little tweak to the governor, don't you think?
So this really is kind of a confusing back and forth, but this is the big education funding bill that the governor has continually patted himself on the back for, saying, Illinois has this. This is going to finally bring equity to schools all across the state of Illinois. To which his critics would say, wait a second, you didn't agree to that at all. You vetoed it before it became law. Kind of a similar instance here where this was a plan by governor's own state board of education that then they said, hey, wait a second, and the governor vetoed it. So this time, yes, you have it overridden. Still waiting to hear actually from the state board of education what needs to be done, because they say there are still some more mistakes. But yes, that was clearly a ding at the governor.
And we're joined now by Senate President John Cullerton, Democrat of Chicago. Good to have you on the program
Thank
again,
you very
sir.
Much for inviting me.
What's your reaction to what the governor had to say? It was mostly an upbeat speech today. A lot of reaction when he got to that balanced budget proposal comment.
Well, he was shorter than Trump. That was a positive thing. He obviously was forced to say something nice about Illinois. First time I've heard that in a while. Anytime he talks about Amazon, you know, it'd be nice if he could highlight the positives of Illinois. But there were so many other things in there that were so deceptive that it was very disappointing.
What are some of those? What are the examples you could cite?
Well, last year the governor proposed a budget, a spending level, and proposed a tax increase. He referred to it as the grand bargain of the Senate. We passed almost exactly what he asked for, and he vetoed it. He also asked for pension reforms, which we put into legislation, which he also vetoed. And it was only the bipartisanship of the Republicans in the Senate and the House that allowed us to even have a budget by overriding the governor. So for him to come here and suggest that we should be bipartisan, when we were bipartisan last year and he wasn't, and he hasn't been bipartisan since he's been the governor. We haven't had a leaders meeting in well over a year. So that's why it was so disappointing to hear what he had to say today.
Was there anything he could have said that made you feel as if he was being earnest about his calls for bipartisanship?
Let me tell you something that I find to be really interesting. In the state of Massachusetts and the state of Maryland, I know the Senate presidents, they have overwhelmingly Democratic majorities in their General Assembly, and they have Republican governors. I asked them if they thought they would be able to defeat the Republican governors this year and elect a Democratic governor. Both of them said they didn't think they had a chance. Their governors are so popular in their state. And I asked them why. He says, well, they're nice guys who work with us, and we pass legislation, and people are happy. That's not the case here in Illinois.
But is there anything the governor could do to get to that point? After you've talked about the past, at this point in time, his speech, he said he wants to try.
So
is that believable?
If you're bipartisan, first of all, you, for the first time, the reason why people couldn't keep a straight face when he said he was going to introduce a balanced budget is because he has never been even close to a balanced budget. And so that's why people had to laugh so much. So the first thing he does in 2 weeks is introduce a balanced budget. The second thing is maybe let's have some leaders' meetings and work on cooperation. All these things he said we didn't pass, we offered to him last year. We offered workers' comp reform. Senator Bordogno and I, a year ago, started our grand bargain. We started passing legislation. He rejected it, forcing her to eventually, out of frustration, leave the General Assembly. So it's just very frustrating.
The governor talked about ending bipartisan sniping today, yet at the same time, he fires a shot across your bow and Speaker Madigan's with this issue with the side businesses of doing property tax appeals.
Yeah, I mean, there's an example of how he's not trying to work with people. He's trying to divide people. And it's very, very disappointing.
Is that a conflict of interest, though, for lawmakers to make the laws here in Springfield and have that as a side business back home?
Well, you know what? There's going to be legislation. I don't practice law. I don't do property tax law. I'm at a law firm that does, just like Representative Durkin does the same thing. He's at a law firm that does property tax work. We'll see what his legislation says. And I don't think we have an attack on people practicing law being in the General Assembly. There's about 18% of the members of the General Assembly are lawyers. There might be many others who would do the same thing. We'll look at his legislation. I don't think it's the number one issue that confronts our state. I think it might be something to do with his campaign and his constant attacks on the speaker.
Does there need to be some sort of legislation that changes the assessment process, gives the more authorization?
We offered property tax relief bills last year. We introduced the same bills that Senator Redonio had introduced 2 years before, and we offered to pass them. The Republicans voted no. The governor said it wasn't part of his deal. He has the tenacity. I mean, it's unbelievable for him to suggest, after proposing a tax increase last year, which we passed that he vetoed, he says, well, we should not be raising taxes. How is he going to balance his budget?
He put this back on the playing table again today, though, asking for legislation to allow local property boards to roll back or vote a referendum on that.
We negotiated with them last year in a bipartisan fashion to try to get a budget and do property tax relief. He has to explain how he's going to pay for the loss in revenues to the schools, which is where most of the property taxes go. He brags about being increasing money to schools, then he talks about taking money away from them. Things have to add up. He's never done it since he's been the governor.
A popular refrain he sounded again today was a call for term limits.
Okay.
He said 80% of the people.
I think we should do a pilot project for term limits. On the ballot in November, he's up for re-election. Let's term limit Bruce Rauner. And if that works, maybe we'll take a look at his legislation in the future years.
Would that be a bill that Republican lawmakers might take a different look at if they have the majorities in the House and Senate?
Well, let's just start with a pilot project, term limits for governor. This guy's the governor. If you want to get rid of him and term limit him to one term, vote against him in November.
President, the governor did, about job creation, particularly highlighting Amazon, categorizing this as an opportunity for the state of Illinois. Given the frustrations that you've just voiced, is there an opportunity, or is this going to be sort of a wasted year as lawmakers, the governor, focused on an election,
yeah,
and waiting for him, as you would say, maybe perhaps he'll be gone and then start again?
I'm all in favor of supporting getting Amazon to come here. The reason why Amazon wants to come here is because of our natural efforts. We have a great transportation system. We have an educated workforce. They haven't asked for workers' comp reform, and that's why they're going to come here. They're moving from a state that has no income tax. They're not deciding to expand there. They're willing to come here. They don't care about marginal tax rates. They care about those things I just talked about. The governor should stop bad-mouthing his own state and highlighting the positive things, as he was forced to do in the early part of his speech today, and that'll help us get those jobs that would come from Arizona.
I'm glad you mentioned workers' compensation reform. When I was talking to members of the working groups that were here working back and forth between the House and the Senate back in the spring, they said, we're within an eyelash of having significant workers' compensation reform.
We passed workers' comp reform 5 years ago. The workers' comp costs are half of what they were 20 years ago and 30% less than what they were 5 years ago. In addition to that, we offered more benefits last year as part of our package. He rejected them. So I was there. I was with Senator Redonia. We worked together. He doesn't know how to cut a deal.
There's a pension reform.
If he's not in charge.
That's a refrain that is certainly making the rounds out there.
Not my words.
The one the governor himself uttered, that phrase.
Pension reform. You have a proposal?
Pension reform. He gave us pension reform language. It was $500 million that was supposed to be saved. We passed it. He vetoed it. He literally vetoed it. He didn't say that tonight.
So is this going to be another one of those grinded out to the last minute kinds of sessions in the spring?
I hope not. I mean, last year it was initially the Senate in a bipartisan fashion, eventually the House in a bipartisan fashion, that had to, over the objections of the governor, pass a budget and pass the revenues needed to try to fund our schools. And over his no help from the governor, we finally passed the school funding reform bill. Major accomplishments last year, making it easier for us to have a balanced budget this year. I think people want to pass a balanced budget and then go to the ballot box in November. That's what most legislators are going to want to do.
President, if the governor did call a leaders' meeting, as you noted, I believe the last one was a year ago, December. What would you say to him first? I know, I'm assuming you would want him to set the agenda, but is there anything you would want to say to him?
I went to meetings with him mm-hmm. since then, but not with all the leaders. Right. I would go to meetings with him and to try to work out on these deals that we talked about along with Senator Redonia. And he just, at the end of the day, can't agree to anything. Because he wants to be able, his pollsters or whatever, tell him you can't sign a tax increase. So it's better to be overridden by some legislators. And that's what happened last year.
When is the last time you two met?
Oh, I don't think we've had a meeting since perhaps May.
You've been here since the Thompson administration. Has that ever happened before?
To not have leaders' meetings, I've been the Senate president for 9 years, not only under Governor Quinn and this guy. And so you can't get anything done if you don't sit down and meet. The fact that we've had a number of meetings with the four legislators without the governor says something, that he doesn't feel comfortable enough to come and sit with all of us and work on things. It's really a lack of leadership.
President Culleton, thanks so much for your time today. We certainly appreciate it. Look forward to talking to you in a couple of weeks when we see that balanced budget proposal
rolled
out. That'll
really be an important day.
Thanks very much.
Okay, thank you.
Amanda, very interesting take on today's speech, of course, from Senate President John Cullerton. Clearly, he believes that there are some issues that need to still be resolved when it comes to getting the governor to focus down on getting the balanced budget passed, and a whole range of issues from workers' comp to pension reform.
What I heard very distinctly from that conversation is a lot of, let's say, the bad taste that was left in legislators' mouths following the negotiations of last year that never really came to fruition. Again, all those grand bargain negotiations that instead landed in sort of this... it wasn't quite a thud because instead something new came in and it wasn't all that they had talked about. So I think there's a lot of lingering frustration was really what I heard from the Senate president. And that is going to, of course, be carrying over into what and what does not get done this year.
Well, from the Senate Republican side of the aisle, we're joined now by Senate Republican leader Bill Brady, Bloomington Republican. Good to have you back on the program, sir.
Good to be with you, Jack.
Your take on today's speech, probably a bit different than your Democratic colleague who was just here.
You know, I'm not sure. I took it as very upbeat, a willingness to set the past aside and focus on Illinois' past successes for tomorrow, to set the election aside and talk about what we can do in a bipartisan way and what we can agree on. And I was encouraged to hear the Democrats' response to the governor's balanced budget.
There was a little snarkiness in that response, yeah. though, don't you agree?
Well, I don't know that there was as much as there's really hope that we could come together. I mean, this is an election year, and I don't think anybody wants to be on the ballot come Election Day without Illinois' legislature having passed a balanced budget. The balanced part is difficult. We differ on priorities, but I do think there's a willingness to at least embrace with enthusiasm the hope that we'll have an opportunity to do this. Could it be easy? No. But the governor wants to do it, and I think my colleagues on both sides of the aisle hope to accomplish that.
You think there's a way to do that with a lower tax rate, also given the governor's promises to increase funding of education?
I do. It's priorities, all right? Do you believe in more government spending in various areas, or do you believe in more government spending in the future of our children and their education? The governor's clearly focused on that as a priority. Over $1 billion in increased funding during his tenure. So, not that the Democrats don't believe in that as well, but they have some pet projects that may have to be sacrificed, at least partially, in order to maintain that emphasis. And by rolling back the tax increase, the governor realizes that the burden that the Democratic proposal put on taxpayers at the end of last year, particularly in light of the federal penalties, I mean, the federal tax changes clearly indicate that states that have high property and high income taxes are no longer going to be subsidized by the federal government for states that keep their property and their income taxes lower, which continues to drive home the governor's point. We need to rein in property taxes for families as well as income taxes.
We have a situation, of course, where this is not only a speech about the state of Illinois, but it's a statement on Bruce Rauner's incumbency and his record as the state's chief executive. He is in a primary battle now with the state representative from this chamber, Jeannie Ives of Wheaton. She's making a serious and strong effort. She had a great presentation before the Chicago Tribune's editorial board the other day. Did Bruce Rauner reach out and solidify his support amongst Republicans here today with his speech?
I think Bruce has. I've endorsed the governor. I believe that the governor needs to focus a lot more on his successes. No, I've been around here and have been a witness to state government for decades. I have not seen any program with the magnitude of the education reform bill last year pass in a bipartisan way. The governor needs to focus on that success. I can tell you, in my studies of state government, nothing that monumental has ever happened to focus on that, the creation of jobs. Now, yeah, the governor is sometimes chastised for talking about the way that Illinois needs to change to attract businesses, and people take that as a negative. But we've had no one who's been a better salesman for bringing jobs to Illinois. I know firsthand Brand Industries. I know what he's trying to do for Amazon. This governor sells what we have, but he also realizes there's more he'd like to be able to sell than other states have.
But isn't he also muddling that message when he has governors from surrounding states saying that we're cleaning Illinois' clock because of your bad business climate?
Let's face it, that's a political message. That's about why people, and I've heard from thousands of people in Illinois about, go for it, governor. Keep fighting for that, governor. We know you're right. That's a political message. And yes, the governor has to highlight areas that need to be changed. When we didn't get all we wanted from GE, and Massachusetts did because the Democratic liberals in Massachusetts understood that they needed to change and reform things to attract jobs, the governor has no choice but to bring that message back and talk for reforms. The governor has no choice to talk about the demand people have in the state for term limits, the demand they have to end at least the perception of corruption in the property tax system in Chicago. He's fighting for the average man, woman, and child in this state, and I applaud his efforts. But when you do that and you point to the difference, you get labeled that you're negative. But no one has been a better salesman than Governor Rauner when it comes to attracting jobs and talking about Illinois' strengths.
Leader Brady, your Democratic counterpart, Senate President John Cullerton, said we nearly had a lot of the very reforms that the governor just spoke of, be it property taxes, workers' compensation, with a grand bargain agreement that was solidified with your predecessor, Leader Redonio, that fell to the wayside because he said, quote, the governor can't make a deal.
And that's unfair. I understand where President Culleton's coming from, and I negotiated much of that package with President Culleton in earnest. And we were at the cusp of a final deal at midnight when we left the state capitol, only to have Speaker Madigan pass his own package, breaking ranks with a few Republicans, but pass his own package. And that's what destroyed the opportunity for a comprehensive plan. I'm not finding fault, but it was Speaker Madigan who decided to head a different direction at that midnight hour the next day on that 4th of July weekend that left all the good things that we had discussed on the cutting room floor. That package would have been comprehensive. It would have provided more property tax relief and overall tax relief for the citizens of the state. It reformed state spending so that we didn't have a $3 billion systemic budget imbalance coming into this year. So I put that more on the shoulders of Speaker Madigan, right, wrong, or indifferent, because we in the Senate, and we were negotiating a bipartisan package until Speaker Madigan decided to go a different direction on that July 4th weekend.
I want to ask, about that budget. You know, as we were talking a little earlier, that budget, $36.1 billion, is still off by at least $1.5 billion in terms of.
You're talking about the Madigan budget?
We're talking about the budget that was passed with Republican support as well. Not as much as the Democrats, but there was Republican support.
No, I confess that when Speaker Madigan went that direction, people were fatigued, their districts were fatigued, and Republicans broke with the Speaker. But it left in abeyance a comprehensive package, and I wish the Speaker hadn't have done that, because I do believe that we could have reached that monumental compromise that would have really advanced the state comprehensively.
You know, as you're speaking about putting the blame on Speaker Madigan for pulling the plug, that of course raises the notion of term limits, something that we've heard from the governor since he was a candidate yet again in this speech. A two-fold question there. Is there any hope for that to pass this year? I'm going to guess that is no, but also, of course, you have been around quite some time in the General Assembly, so how do you address supporting a governor who's calling for that so strictly, saying, I'll be here for 8 years at the most, when you, of course, have been here for longer?
Well, again, I think it's a matter of fairness. Every district ought to be under the same term limits. You know, Speaker Madigan carries a great deal of clout for his district because he's been here for over 40 years, right? Speaker of the House for 30. My district appreciates that we've got to be competitive with that, so they want to reelect me, at least they have so far, to represent them. So, but if we level the playing field and have term limits for everybody, I think we'll learn that other states, it's worked well. It doesn't mean you can't have a career in political service. It just means you can't serve more than 10 years in one chamber. And I think that would be a positive outcome. Note, clearly, Speaker Madigan, Governor Rauner, are divided on this issue, as I am with Speaker Madigan. There are differences of opinion. He believes term limits are at the voter's box. We believe that constitutional measures to protect that are better. So whether or not the Speaker is willing to engage and allow that to go on the ballot is really up to him. But I do believe the governor realizes that the people need to know, the people they're electing for office, do they support term limits?
What about this notion that the governor also raised in terms of forbidding legislators from also serving as property tax attorneys? You, of course, are a real estate developer and also have a side gig, if we can call it that. Yeah. Why property tax attorneys? Should there also be a ban on you, for example, developing properties? Are there conflicts of interest there?
You know, I think what the governor's trying to drive home is certainly the allegation, not by the governor, but by residents of Chicago, about a corrupt and unjust system. And whether that means legislators should be distanced to bring back a perception of impurity, I understand what he's trying to drive at here. And I applaud him. How we come about that needs to have further discussion. But there is a very serious allegation of impropriety, particularly in the Cook County area, when it comes to the property tax system, the appeal system, and so forth. I think the governor is echoing what the voters are telling him when he travels throughout the area about what needs to change.
Leader Brady, thanks very much for your time. We appreciate it.
Great to be
with
you.
We'll see you back here in a couple of weeks after the budget message.
Always.
This has been a special broadcast from IPR of the Governor's State of the State Address. You're listening to 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org. On the panel of interviewers, early on was Rich Miller, a State House journalist, as well as the host Jack Tichner, and Chicago Public Television correspondent Amanda Vinicky. This is WGLT Normal, made possible with listener contributions at WGLT.org.